Welcome to the latest episode of Your Wealth with Gemma Dell, a podcast series designed to help you create, grow, and protect your wealth.
Hi, and welcome to this episode of Your Wealth. I'm Gemma Dale, NAB's Director of SMSF and Investor Behaviour, and today I wanted to cover one of the really thorny issues investors are currently grappling with, particularly retirees. As anyone with even a passing interest in finance would be aware, we now have some of the lowest interest rates in recorded history right across the world. This is translating into record low bond yields, and for the average person, record low interest rates on their cash and on their term deposits. Low interest rates are generally fantastic news if you're a business owner who needs to borrow, if you have a mortgage, or if you're borrowing to invest in property or shares. But it's really not great news for anyone who needs passive income to live on, particularly retirees, as I mentioned. So what do you do? Today, I'm joined by Mark Todd, who is the host of Your Money, Your Call Fixed Income and the Money Management Program on Sky Business. And he's the head of Customer Direct in the Fixed Income, Currency and Commodities business at NAB. I have so much trouble saying that.
Yeah.
Mark is a really highly regarded expert in fixed income, and he does a brilliant job of explaining the current fixed income market. Mark, thanks for joining me.
Pleasure. Glad to be here. We're going to change fixed income, currency and commodities to markets just for you.
Just me.
That's the latest announcement.
It just
came out last.
We're just going to call it that. That'd be much easier.
Yeah, it came out last week, so we'll be going into markets. So it must be because the media conversations are getting harder.
All too hard. So Mark, look, the world is experiencing record low interest rates and this has been going on for quite a while now. Give us a bit of background on how this happened.
Yeah, 10 years. I think, you know, part of the challenges with the global financial crisis was that the regulator, the policy makers, the politicians really didn't understand what it was happening. I was in the US and I was talking to one of the Australian treasurers, and that gentleman had been to Japan to try and get some money for the bank. He was going to the US to try and talk to fund managers, and I said to him, "How bad is this?" He said, "We've never seen anything like this in our life."
Right.
And so big banks prior to the GFC could have funded themselves at a whim. Could have done anything. It was no problem. And so what they would have done is organise their funding around, you know, the whims of the property market. I better go and get some more money.
And everyone wants to borrow. I shall give them some money.
And so the traditional ways that they had funded really, you know, dried up. And so you saw global institutions really struggling. And if you think about something like Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac, which is the US funding organisations for property and student loans in the US, you had Mr. Paulson, the Treasury Secretary, flying to China to assure Chinese government and their investors that they would honour the obligations of a quasi-institution. It wasn't, the US didn't own it anymore. They'd moved it on into the public sphere. And so you had a genuine understanding of the fear that the world at large had when Barack Obama came in as the president. George Bush was just handing over what he didn't realise was happening. I mean, no disrespect to Mr. Bush. No one really understood what
hadn't happened in anyone's lifetime, right?
And so central banks worked on this idea. They would have gone straight into academia, and that's entirely understandable. And they would have said, what we need to do is stimulate activity.
Yes.
And the way to stimulate activity is you reduce the cost of borrowings. Corporate world steps into the breach and sells more widgets, retools its business and sells more product.
So we saw that in Australia, right?
Well,
two things. We saw handouts to individuals and massive stimulus in that way, and we saw a massive reduction in interest rates very quickly.
Yeah. What we didn't see was the response at a corporate level globally.
Yes.
What we saw was increased pressure on wages, increased pressure on jobs, a retooling of the business without a retooling for productivity sakes. Reorganisation of financial affairs, so financial engineering. We didn't see the response and the regulators didn't see the response that they thought would happen. Everyone was basically at stage fright.
Yeah.
So they started to push rates harder and harder and harder and do QE. So what they started to do was buy their own securities, forcing squeeze out, forcing places where you couldn't invest your money, you had to invest your money elsewhere. And everyone talks about people are taking on greater risk. What happened was people became even more conservative.
Mm.
So if you scare people enough, they believe in the fear and they then go to ground.
Yeah.
Effectively, the corporate world sort of went to ground. It learnt some skills around how to not give pay rises, how to make less people work for more, more work.
Mm.
They learnt those skills. And particularly in the US, there was mass job losses.
Yes.
And if you think US is the benchmark for a lot of this behaviour, then there was a lot of people saying, when I keep pushing rates lower, they should borrow eventually and they will then spend it in their business. And that's not what they did.
It just didn't happen.
The desire for dividends, the desire for conservative outcomes really started to impact behaviour around corporates. So we then get this negative loop.
Yep.
We can't get rates higher because what we've effectively done is move the debt pile to the rest of the world. So the rest of the world now holds more debt that was able to sustain the global economies. And as they hold more debt, because they were buying properties and the like, on these lower rates, there's a limitation on where, this is one of the reasons, there's a limitation on how far rates can go, how to lift rates back to normal.
So the challenge then that we look at, so if we talk about the consequences at the individual level, if I'm an individual investor or just a common or garden person in Australia on the street, what I know and what I've experienced is potentially the GFC impact of my portfolio very negatively. So I took a big hit to my equity portfolio. None of our banks went under, so I'm okay on that front. But I lost quite a few dollars in my equity portfolio that may have come back by now. Maybe it hasn't, So it's taken a long time.
Depends if you held on.
It depends. Oh, and if you didn't hold on, you definitely lost money. If you went to cash,
then you've really suffered.
You have. And not only have you really suffered because you lost that capital, but you also have gotten very, very low rates since then.
Yeah.
So the average person, it's been 10 years now, is still experiencing very, very low rates on cash and term deposits. And what you're telling me, I think, is that there's not a really high likelihood of that changing anytime soon. Central banks can't increase rates very rapidly because people are still very much indebted.
Yep.
And they're quite fearful about the idea of borrowing more or trying to stimulate the business that they hold or the economy in that way.
So the GFC created some really high term deposit rates. And then as they rolled off, there was a new world order and the rates were much lower. And so people were trying to work out, where do I go? Where do I try and rebalance my portfolio? And over this time, we've mentioned the debt pile. If you think about things like the other two drivers to my mind are the aging demographics. So everyone thinks of Japan as being a really older, average age is quite old. For the purpose of this, let's say Japan is the oldest. There is one other, but it's very small. Second is Germany.
Wow, and so when you think about, also pretty old, I believe.
Yeah, but the second is Germany. So when you think about Germany and its productivity and its mechanisation, the way they've approached it, part of the challenges for higher rates is the ageing demographic globally, where the Western powers sit, where the ageing, even in parts of Asia, in China, it's the same thing. So if you think about the aging demographics, it's harder to sustain higher rates. They're not out there trying to borrow as much.
And then they're not running businesses. They're not doing tech startups, for example. Is that harsh? It's a bit harsh.
And the next thing is, though, is the Internet of Everything. Your tech start plays into the Internet of Everything. So you've got Amazon showing up here. And you think, okay, as in a retail buyer, I'm probably just going to sit back and see what the offerings look like. And if you think about the Internet of Everything where you can plug in, play and get, I think that makes it very hard to hold higher rates because the cost of production is getting cheaper, it's lower. Now, that's got a political response where people want to stop trade deals, people want to stop the ramifications of this Internet of Everything and they ask the politicians to provide that answer. That's really hard to provide.
Yeah.
But what it does from a central bank perspective, and that's where you look at the benchmark for rates, makes it harder for them to see a pathway to really high rates.
To high rates.
They might say there'll be modestly high rates, but if you're waiting for 5% term deposits, 10% term, do not wait for that. That's not what's
going
to happen.
Those days are a long way away.
That's right. So you need to be thinking more strategically around how often do I engage my portfolio? What do I need to do? What's the balance look like? What are my expectations? You know, one of the greatest salves for the wound of really low rates is see about getting a day's work.
Okay.
You know, changing the way you think about work. Is there opportunities? Now, I'm not being blasé, but I'm saying the way we're going to fuller employment, is there something you can do that then compensates? So you've got that little bit more balance around.
In that way.
Yeah, so you think, okay, let's do 1 or 2 day work, whatever that
there
might be.
There are social security and tax incentives for older people to work or return to work.
You know what I mean? If you turn around and say, okay, what are the options around getting back into the workforce in a way that you want to? Like, I'm not trying to draw a Goldilocks world. But if you look at the numbers and say, here's my portfolio, and I could add $100 a week or whatever through work, how does my portfolio now look to perform? You take so much heat out of the expectations on your portfolio. You can rebalance and take some longer term investment strategies around, okay, I'm going to buy this and I'll hold it for 5 years because I don't need to turn it over.
So I really like that idea and I think it's incredibly helpful. We know that investors, if we look at their portfolio exclusively, so externally to any additional income they can bring in through their own personal exertion, we know that Australian investors, so I look at SMSFs as a bit of a proxy for people's retirement portfolios, and they do constitute by far the largest proportion of people's retirement portfolios in Australia. $600 billion, half of that is in retirement assets, so it's in pension phase. It's there just to provide people with an income. And we know somewhere between a quarter and a third of that is in cash and term deposits. So from the conversation we've just had, those cash and term deposits are very, very low yielding currently, certainly relative to 20 years ago. And they're not likely to change anytime soon.
No.
So what do we suggest that people who are in a situation where they go, this portfolio is not generating what I need it to generate, or I was hoping rates would come back and just doesn't seem likely. What do I do?
Okay, so, you know, I think there's an array of different securities that you can look at and say, what's the income generation from those? So I think of the REIT market.
So that's what I used to call property trusts.
Yeah.
Listed property trusts.
So do some research on that. Look at what, you know, debt levels are. When I think of the REIT, I think, what's the tenancy? Like, who is the person paying the rent? What's the quality of those rental agreements look like? So that's easy to find.
Yep.
You'll be able to look at
industrial and office buildings.
Absolutely.
And so
you can look at anything you like and just say, look, you know, and you can again do the filter because on NABTRADE you can do these filters around what type of REIT you want to look at. It will generate something. You can go and look at a research report and you can look at who the tenants are, and that's the first thing to try and do. And look at when the tenancy agreements come up. This is not going to be, we're not looking to build models. We're not looking to be experts in Excel and do, you know, VBA and all that. We're not doing that.
Not doing fancy things. But you're saying a big office building that's got very high quality tenants, it's going to play
10 years worth of, you know, they've got a 10-year lease or whatever.
They're going to pay you a good solid yield.
Well, I think they're going to pay me something in the fives to sixes and it's going to grow at inflation or roundabout. It's something like that. So I start to look at the REIT market is something where I can get a broad spread of different tenants. I can go to different jurisdictions. I can do all sorts of things. So I can look at that and say, okay, how about that? I can look at the hybrid market and say, okay, what am I seeing as a return for hybrid markets? I can look at...
So talk to me quickly about hybrids and how they work.
Okay, so when we think
We've talked about it in a full episode, but the
correct.
2 minute
Correct. So when we think about banks need to change the way they fund themselves, one of the ways they do it is via a hybrid market. So they can issue shares. If they go up and become more conservative, they'll issue hybrids.
Okay.
It's just the way they borrow. So banks can come to market and say, I want to borrow some money from you and this is the commitment I'll make. Exactly the same way they do it in a term deposit. These are the covenants, these are the protections. Term deposit, this is the guarantees, this is what you can do. Hybrids are similar. So it's just a question of how banks fund themselves, and hybrids are one asset they can do.
Yeah, so they pay a much higher yield than a term deposit. It's generally franked, but it's on market. There may be some capital fluctuation in value, correct, and it will convert to a share at some point.
In the event that they can't repay their money.
Right,
so
okay.
It doesn't always convert to shares because they'll pay you back $100 at the first available opportunity if the regulator allows them, if the market circumstances allow them. They've tended to always pay back.
Okay.
Because they want to some extent, sustain that investor base.
Mm-hmm.
Banks think of investor bases in different ways. So I, at the start of the show, I was saying a treasurer went and tried to borrow money and found that the lenders were no longer taking his call. They've learned that lesson.
Yes.
So I want to have hybrid investors. I want to have equity investors. I want to have senior debt. So that's how they think of it.
Right, okay.
So I think there's REITs, there's hybrids. You know, I'm not against equities. It's just that if you buy equities, you need to be able to hold for the volatility.
Yes.
So it's you know, all this is answered by a little bit of education and a lot of ignorance on the white noise.
Yeah.
So you hear it and you need to make a decision on why you started something on the Monday for the Tuesday finish. Like, why you built the portfolio the way
why
you did.
Why you're holding it.
What is the goal of that portfolio for you?
How do you feel about the talk that there has been such a chase for yield, right? So many investors desperate for income that they've gone and effectively bid up the prices of any company that was willing to pay a good yield.
So, you know, I don't think there's been a chase for yield. I know that's controversial, but
you've that's just okay. Described, we like controversy.
Well, you've just described the SMSF sector and how much hold term deposits.
Yeah.
So I think that a lot of people are still really gun shy about what the GFC did for them.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's very hard for them to rebuy into, you know, the high dividend playing stocks because that's been volatile. It's hurt.
Mm-hmm.
So if I think of Telstra,
yeah,
got to $6, it's now $3 and whatever it is, 50 or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
I think the banks haven't moved a lot. You know, some have, but some haven't. You know, you see the challenges that CBA is now suffering from, and so that volatility. I've had people ring up and say, you know, Telstra's down and CBA's down, and but that's the story of the equity market. It's a voting mechanism. It votes and says, I don't like what's happening for whatever reason, and it gets a mood about a company, and it's very hard to get out of that mood.
Right.
Whereas, if I think about the probably the greater challenge is the fact that everyone hears that rates are going higher, and they live in hope. When a central bank talks about a cautious move at interest rates, you have to think about what cautious is to their mind.
Yeah.
Cautious to my 15-year-old son is entirely different to a 60-plus-year-old central banker.
Yeah.
And think about it in that context. They are not talking about these rates going anytime massively higher in 2018 or 2019. They're not thinking that. They're not acting that way. They're not now. There could be changes to this. There could be, you know, tax changes in the US. It could be all sorts of things.
Yes.
But it's hard to imagine central banks are going to put at risk the billions of dollars they've spent to try and keep the economy in the sustainable manner they have.
Mm-hmm.
And until you can see the political class bringing in some sort of various reforms that create the productivity that is necessary for the growth, I'm unsure that rates can really go that much higher. I mean, they can go higher, but they aren't going to 10%. They're not going to 5%. I don't see that. I mean, and I don't think many people see that.
Okay. So you've talked about REITs, you've talked about hybrids, you've talked about equities, obviously. You've talked about a lot of things. Any other thoughts for those who are still looking for opportunities in their portfolio?
Well, you know, I think there's clearly there's been a few Australian-based fund managers who are investing in the US. And I, you know, I have some good friends who are really smart investors. And they always say, try and find a fund manager if you're going to spend a fund manager dollar who can deal in a space that you have no knowledge of, that you can't rebuild yourself. You can't use that sophistication that you can research. Now, NAB has issued a few. I don't want to mention because it's not a product flog, but that was a really good learning curve for me to meet these fund managers and understand, you know, how they went about their process,
mm.
who they invested on behalf of. Mm-hmm. Now, I like the fact that some fund managers were really embedded with their investors,
mm-hmm.
knew them intimately, had been with them for 10 years, that sort of stuff. So start to do that research and say, okay, do I have a level of comfort that somebody can invest in the US? Because the US is clearly seeming to grow.
Yeah.
Independent NASDAQ's of the up. Yeah, independent of the
25%,
president. They seem
yeah.
to be going, you know, everyone talks about geopolitical risk, but the economy mm. seems to be growing really well.
Mm.
So if I'm going to spend some money mm. on a manager, I'd look at what's the right manager,
mm.
take a bit of time to do some research. Again, I'm not talking hours. Ring
yeah.
them up.
Yeah.
Call them. I want to give you my money. Can you explain to me why you would like my money and what you'd like to do with it and how you invest and what you'd like to do?
Mm.
These things are, you know, the internet is one of the beneficiaries of videos, engagement. Take the time. Don't be bashful. You were giving your hard-earned, and that's the thing that you lose sleep over.
Mm.
You've got to make sure that they lose sleep over it, because not many fun. Well, I'm not sure that they lose sleep over it in the way. So you've got to have the right investor base mm. in the fund manager, so the fund manager feels committed to those people. That's what I'm always looking for. If they're not committed to the investor base, then they'll take a risk to try and get back something, or they've got a strategy. They won't.
Yep.
The market's wrong.
They don't feel it quite as much.
Hang
as
on
you
a second.
Do.
I'm losing sleep. How are you feeling?
So bonds and government bonds and so on, they feel very sophisticated for the average individual.
They're not.
So tell me how they're not.
Well,
how to access them?
Okay,
how should you do your research? What do you think about
most people here will have entered into a mortgage at some point.
Mm-hmm.
So think about it in the same way.
A couple of times.
That's right. So think about it in the same way. You borrowed money
mm.
and you paid that money back.
Yes.
Twist that around. I'm okay. going to lend money, and mm-hmm. will that person pay the money back?
Yes.
So what was in the mortgage document?
Mm.
Okay, so what's in the bond document? What's the covenant? So I just want to know what are the three or four different points
mm-hmm.
that means if you can't pay me back, what can I do?
Mm-hmm.
So, okay, net tangible assets, you can't have debt more than 50%. It's like really simple data points that you say, what are the protections for me?
Mm-hmm.
In a previous podcast, I said, when you're talking to somebody who is trying to sell you a product,
mm-hmm.
a bond.
Yeah.
Well, okay, so ask them, what are the mm-hmm. covenants?
Mm-hmm.
And if they don't answer,
yeah.
don't buy that, because they don't know their product.
So how do I, as a common or garden retail investor, access bonds, right? Most of these are huge amounts of money by my standards. How would I access something like that, knowing that it's going to pay a better yield than my term deposit, for example?
So you can get this listed bonds, simple corporate bonds. So there's listed bonds like Pete.
Yeah.
You know, Pete is the oldest customer the NAB has.
Okay.
120 plus years.
Yeah, wow.
Yeah.
Hmm.
And they did some listed bonds. You know, there's Cube did some, mm-hmm. the logistics business did some mm-hmm. subordinated debt, so they issued some bonds. You can buy XTBs on the market, so that's another organisation that gives you different corporate bonds, so that's available. For sophisticated investors, they can come and talk to us at the NAB and we can work out how to help them as well. So I think there's an array of
different... It's worth noting that sophisticated investor is a... It's an actual term
it's
under
actual
the legislation.
Term.
It doesn't mean
yeah.
you think you're pretty smart. It means
you need to meet a certain criteria.
Yes.
There's an array. It's around how many assets you might have or what's your income profile and
yep.
all sorts of different things. And the accountant can sign off on that and confirm that that's right. So one of the things that we don't want to do is have the wrong product with clients.
Yeah.
It's not something we're about. So we're very
happy
to
have the conversations. So a sophisticated investor can access more complex products,
more
but
complex
they
products.
Lose the retail protections that an average
Correct.
Investor would have. So it's a real trade-off if you want to get access to that market.
Correct.
You can do it.
And think about it from the perspective of all due respect to the ASX and the like. Some of the issuers who want to come into the bond market who don't want to have a listed instrument, it's because of the costs associated with doing listed.
Yeah, it's
listed
expensive.
Is expensive.
Mm.
And so they say, I'm borrowing... In the same way you want to go for the cheapest mortgage, they want to go for the cheapest borrowing. And
yeah.
so if they want to borrow $100 million and they can get it via an array of individual investors, they might do what's called over-the-counter. So they might do that. But that's you know, that's a space that's evolving.
Mm-hmm.
I think it will be incumbent on everyone to try and find conservative assets for people that are just invested in cash. You know, we have to try and solve for this. We are desperately keen to try and get them a better outcome. The way we talk about it, it's customer to customer.
Mm.
You know, the people who are our term deposit customers and the people who are our corporate borrowers are both our customers. So how do we introduce them to each other in a way that they can fulfill each other's needs? So Pete was a classic where you could, you know, open it up to retail. That was a good thing. So we're very keen to try and work hard on getting that right. We've got to work with the regulator to make sure that we don't get the wrong outcomes for people.
Mm-hmm.
It's a fine line, but you know, that's a work in progress. That's all right.
Okay. So investors, you know, key takeaways, it's probably not going to be a lot of fun if you're waiting for interest rates to increase dramatically.
It'll be a long time.
It's going to take
a
while.
I could be wrong, but I think it'll be a long time.
And so if you are one of those investors with large amounts of cash and term deposits waiting for rates to go up, and there has been that talk about it, there's probably going to be a while before that happens in any meaningful way, and you may want to think about some of the things we've discussed.
I think you want to probably reach out to somebody on NabTrade. They can, you know, we can organise a conversation with anyone that wants to reach out. I think you want to have another conversation, do a little bit more due diligence.
There's plenty of research out there.
Yeah, but do a little bit of due diligence on how to avoid the white noise and look at some basic fundamentals.
Mm-hmm.
And the basic fundamental is, you know, how high can rates go? That's your first question.
Yeah.
Because that
if I need the income, is it going to be enough?
Yeah, that plays into your whole cash story. How much do you have in your cash bucket? What's the role of it? So have that conversation first.
Mm-hmm.
And then you start to play out for the rest of your conversation around what your liabilities look like. So some money so you don't have to worry about your portfolio. And then some strategies around your portfolio so that the portfolio starts to look after itself. And then what's the mechanism to make sure you're on top of it?
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't mean looking at the internet every 10 minutes. It's just,
don't do that. You're very
crazy. That's just not good for your life. So it's about getting some structure.
Well, Mark, thanks so much for your time.
My pleasure.
If you'd like to know more, if you'd like to sign up for more information from the NAB about any of the things we've discussed, please email us at yourwealth@nab.com.au. Thanks so much for your time, and we look forward to helping you in the future with your wealth.
Thank you for listening to Your Wealth with Gemma Dale. To stay up to date, please subscribe to this podcast series or email us at yourwealth@nab.com.au.
Please note that any advice provided in this podcast has been prepared without taking into account your objectives, financial circumstances, or needs. Before acting, you should consider the appropriateness of the information. To find out more, please visit nab.com.au.